You're listening to the ESO Network, your station for all things geek.
In a world filled with cigars, craft beer, comics, movies, and video games,
only two men are brave enough to search out all things nerdy.
It's the Cigar Nerds Podcast!
And welcome to the Cigar Nerds Podcast. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm the producer, founder, Brad Jackson. Look at that technical title
shit.
Your
title, dude. All right, I'm the czar then, if you're going to be founder, producer, or whatever.
I mean, you could be the czar. I'm okay with that. Whatever. We got titles and shit, dude.
I'm H-I-N-C, head nerd in charge.
Sweet.
Well, today, since this is our un-Christmas episode, as I'm titling it, and we'll explain that later, more later on.
So it's very time. Merry un-Christmas and fuck you all to everyone.
It's time for a very special Santa Tim's Picks.
Yeah!
And for Santa's Tim's Picks, we're having a special Christmas cigar to go with our Christmas theme. So what are we smoking today, Brad?
I don't know what you're smoking, but I'm smoking the Nasty Nutcracker. I think you got something to do with Rudolph's asshole or something in your hand. I'm
nope.
Not sure.
I am smoking the Rabid Reindeer.
Ah, that's
CAO,
it.
CAO releases a special holiday Christmas box every year. Last year it was, I think, Bad Santa and Evil Snowman. So this year it's the Rabid Reindeer and the Nasty Nutcracker.
Yeah, and you know the difference here, I think, is you know, the Nasty Nutcracker is the lighter, less strengthier version of the two, with, you know, more of a Nicaraguan, you know, wrapper. And it's just tweaked just slightly to be a little bit spicier version of the MX2.
No, that's the reindeer. The Nutcracker, I believe, is the CAO Gold. Basically, it's not just a rebranding of one of their regular cigars. It's kind of a remix. So with the CAO Gold, they said they've changed up the wrapper filler combo to give it a little more spicier flavor. With the Rabid Reindeer, it's a new version of the CAO MX2, which is already a Maduro cigar, but this one they've added some Honduran and Nicaraguan Lajero tobacco to it to add to the strength. So you're getting, if you like the MX2, you're just getting a stronger version of that cigar.
Yeah, which the MX2 on its own is a very, you know, well-rounded smoke. I thoroughly enjoy it, and it being kicked up a couple of notches. Yeah. You know, smoking the Gold here, I'm hardcore. I like to smoke a nice cigar that's going to put me on my ass. This isn't necessarily doing it for me. So for you pussies out there that like a lighter smoke, this is the one for you.
Yeah, like I said, if you have the cojones, go for the Rabid Reindeer. Like I said, the CAO has been doing this regular with their holidays. I had their 4th of July cigar, which was a remix of their CAO Americana, which was the Sinister Sam.
Yeah, and that was a damn good smoke. I got to hand it to
you. And the box art and the labels on these are always hilarious. You definitely should pick those. And you can get these at the cigar shop incoming. It's a limited edition. They only make like around 2,000 boxes for each holiday.
So you know what that means? You got to be somewhere Saturday between the hours of 4 and 8, preferably the cigar shop, to get this cigar.
Oh, yeah. So when you stop by for this live recording that's about to start, yeah, you can have a Rabid Reindeer with us.
R2, R3, maybe a glass of wine, a beer. No natty ice, though. It's going to break your bank, I promise.
Yeah, that's the whole test the test thing. If you decide to order the natty ice, they'll throw you out.
So
what do you like? How are you liking yours so far?
I mean, like I said, I like it as far as the flavor profile goes. It is a little bit lighter than what I would typically smoke. It doesn't have quite the strength. I mean, it does have a nice, you know, creaminess to it. And, I mean, as far as the wrapper consistency and, you know, the smoke goes, it all holding together well. It's a very good, you know, well-rounded smoke, just a little lighter. I would prefer a little bit more kick in the balls.
Yeah, this reindeer, it holds up good. Yeah, nice, dark, oily wrapper. And like I said, it's definitely got that kick I enjoy, because I've already smoked the freaking double Lajero earlier, so two of these back to back, I'm gonna have a nice cigar buzz going. But yeah, it's a good cigar. I'd definitely recommend it.
So, I mean, is it decided? I guess we're going to have to go in on a box just for the artwork and put it under the nerd tree.
Yeah, maybe. All right. Well, that will kick off our Christmas episode. So stay tuned, folks. It was December 24th on Hollis Avenue at the dark when I seen a man chilling with his dog at the park. I approached him very slowly with my heart full of fear. Looked at his dog. And welcome to the Cigar Nerd Podcast, live edition at the Cigar Shop. I'm your host, Smokin' Joe.
I'm the co-host, producer, and founder, Brad Jackson.
You gotta come up with an extra title, just add an extra title every episode.
I mean, I figure until we get to like episode 15, then I'm gonna have a hard time coming up with additional titles, so.
This is our Christmas episode, so I should have been Santa Joe, and you could have been like, Elf
Brad Naughty Jackson. Elf Jackson.
Brad is the elf on our shelf. Well, since, like I said, this is our first live show, we're here at the home of the cigar nerds, the Cigar Shop Incoming.
Yeah, I gotta say, man, it feels good to be at our home away from home. Although, it's a little bit weird staring at the wine cellar and just knowing how many thousands of dollars of bottles of wine and stuff are just within, like, a six-feet diff.
And getting fresh Guinness. We actually have somebody that will bring us Guinness while we're recording instead of having to, bottled Guinness at the house
with
no one to bring us one.
I think now's an appropriate time as we're talking about the holiday season and everything else. Keep in mind that all these people that are serving you, bringing you drinks, or helping you in retail stores, guess what? They have families. Appreciate those folks.
Tip your bartenders, ladies and gentlemen. And like I said, this is going, if you hadn't been able to figure out from our opening segment there, and why didn't you? This is our, I'm calling it the un-Christmas episode because most people have a Christmas tradition with the family and all that stuff. Yeah, guys like me, like I don't really like my family, and I don't have any kids or anything like that. So for me, my Christmas tradition is going to eat Chinese food because on Christmas, what we learned from watching The Christmas Story, the only thing open is Chinese places and Waffle House and watching some action
movie theaters occasionally.
And movie theaters. So today we're going to talk about untraditional Christmas films. The rules to make our list was it had to take place at Christmas, but have absolutely nothing to do with Christmas. It's not a legitimate Christmas movie. It just happens to occur at Christmas.
Yeah, I don't think I could have summed it up any better. So
yeah, we started off with a list of like 20 films of that fit that category and kind of narrowed it down to what we considered the top.
And what was weird is out of our list, we didn't do Nightmare Before Christmas or
see that wouldn't count because that's a Christmas.
Well, yeah, true.
That's Christmas set
in. Yeah, but I mean, it's still unorthodox. I mean,
it has Christmas in the title, so I was like, it doesn't count.
I mean, it was also directed by I think Nightmare Before Christmas was actually directed and everything.
That's
by
a Tim Burton film.
Tim Burton, but later on, we're going to see Tim Burton arise in the future as well on
We'll get there. But let's start with what, to me, is definitely my Christmas tradition that I have to watch every year.
Can I go ahead
and
say it?
What?
Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Damn straight. We'd have to fit that in at some point in the show. Yeah,
probably multiple points.
Yeah. Yeah, Die Hard 1 and 2, they're just straight up happens at Christmas. And like I said, if you recognize the song from our opening segment, there was Run DMC's Christmas in Hollis. And if you didn't recognize that song, leave now. You're not cool enough to listen to this podcast.
Which, it's ironic that we use that song because we weren't even thinking about it when watching, Die Hard. I mean,
Die
it was
Hard again.
Absolute serendipity.
And
that's
that
right.
Is in the Die Hard soundtrack. They're on their way to Nakatomi Towers and Argyle puts it on in the limo, and Bruce's like, "Don't you have any Christmas music?" And he's like, "Man, this is Christmas music."
Dude, I got to say, Argyle, man, I wish we would have saw a bigger role of him in the film because, I mean, just a few thinks that you get of him.
Through most of the film, he doesn't even realize what's going on. He's hanging absolutely out, getting drunk oblivious. In the limo, chilling with the bear. What? There's terrorists taking over this building? Yeah.
So,
and this was at a time when terrorists weren't Middle Eastern. It was East German. The 80s were so different.
Yeah, these are a whole next level of terrorists. This is back when, you know, they wore nice Versace suits and everything else and had a little bit of class.
Which, you know, as we learn in the movie, they're not really terrorists. They were thieves.
Yeah.
Pretending to be terrorists. And Alan Rickman as Hans Gruber.
Yeah, I got to say, man, that character, just phenomenal job all the way around on that one.
Yeah, it was his first big film role, too. So, you know, all you kids know him as, Professor Snape from Harry Potter, but originally
who?
He was Hans Gruber.
Snape. I've never seen a Harry Potter film, so.
He was also in Dogma as the Metatron.
All right, that one I would recognize.
There you go. Like, so.
I was killing brain cells in my early childhood, so I don't know anything about this Harry, maybe Harry Pothead or something. But
we're too old for Harry Potter. So, yeah. Like I said, when you talk Alan Rickman, you're talking Die Hard. And, the line that he's like, you're just another American who thinks he's a cowboy. And then Bruce Willis is like, yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
Yeah, and this is, one movie that really put Bruce Willis on the map. You know, prior to this movie, he was basically known for more comedic roles in television.
Yeah,
because
he was on, how was that show where he was the, I'm having a brain fart now. I can't even remember the show. So I know people are screaming at us now what the name of his show was with him and Cybill Shepherd, and he's a detective. But that was like his big role at the time, and like I said, he had mainly been a comedic actor. And this is the movie that made him into the action star. You know, the badass Bruce Willis that you know today came from Die Hard. I mean, without Die Hard, you wouldn't have had any of the other films that he's been in.
And I didn't realize this movie was actually based off of a novel back in 1979, Nothing Lasts Forever.
Yeah. Well, it's funny that Bruce Willis was like one of the last choices to play John McClane. Because originally there was another book by that same author called The Detective.
Uh-huh.
And what's his name? Sinatra played him in The Detective.
Yeah, Frank Sinatra, yep.
And so, yeah, he contractually, they were obligated to offer him the role, and he turned it down. And then the next choice was Arnold Schwarzenegger. They were going to make it a sequel to Commando. Did you imagine Arnold Schwarzenegger? Yippee-ki-yay, motherfucker.
I just don't think it would have worked. I mean, you know, there's probably a lot of people that were doubting Willis at the time and everything, but, I mean, he came through as a phenomenal actor. I mean, hands down, probably one of my favorites.
Yeah, I mean, I said that's probably my favorite action. I mean, it's been like regarded as one of the best action movies of all time. And there's so many cliches that we saw come after that started with Die Hard, like where the hero is underpowered and trapped against enormous odds and just trying to fight for, like Under Siege with Steven Seagal.
Yep.
I mean, that's basically Die Hard on a boat.
I'm on a boat. I feel like we should drop that sound clip in here somewhere or something.
Yeah, Die Hard on a boat. That's pretty much how you describe that movie. And then the what's his name? Reginald Vell Johnson as Sergeant Al Powell.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, dude. And tell me that name doesn't come with authority. I mean, you cannot be named Reginald without some sort of authority. Like, I mean, that's just a powerful name.
Yeah. And what's hilarious about Al, too, is that actor.
You know what I think is hilarious?
What?
The freaking cop stereotypes. I mean, dude, he rushes in. I mean, dude just probably bought $50 worth of freaking junk food from the convenience store before he decides.
When he knows, like, when Bruce eats, like, the old Twinkie, and he can, like, quote the ingredients of the Twinkie from memory.
I think that's what gave it away that, Bruce might actually be a cop.
Yeah. And then the FBI shows up and they're all a bunch of assholes. The chief was kind of didn't know what was going on. It was like so many old like 80s cop movie stereotypes you see like kind of started in Die Hard.
Well, I mean, I think it just goes to show the arrogance that a lot of times comes, or I guess ignorance for that matter, that comes with people's job titles. You know, that, oh, well, you know, I'm freaking, you know, head director of the FBI, blah, 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 so I'm going to do things my way. Fuck the guy that's on the inside that's got the,
But yeah, back to Sergeant Al there. That actor has been a cop in just about every movie I've ever... That guy, I don't know if he's ever played anything else. Like, every time I've seen him, he's playing a cop. He was the father on Family Matters,
who was a cop. And that's where, when I saw him, yep. I didn't put the two together, and I was like, holy shit, Family Matters.
So Urkel could, could tie into the Die Hard universe. I think his name was Carl Winslow on that, but yeah. And then also, he's the cop in Ghostbusters. When they're all in jail and somebody comes to get them, take them to the meeting with the mayor,
yeah.
It's Al.
That's awesome.
And speaking of Ghostbusters characters, the guy who plays the asshole reporter in Die Hard is the guy who played the EPA dude who shuts off the power grid in Ghostbusters. So that guy also made a career of playing an asshole.
So it's nice to know with the Die Hard franchise that we, you know, were able to produce a whole bunch of assholes out of the film series.
Yeah. Oh, that East German terrorists. I mean, that's
yeah.
I haven't seen a good movie about dirty East Germans in a while. And its sequel too, which takes place pretty much a year later, another Christmas movie.
Yeah, and you know, I only got around, you know, before we did the episode. I can remember back when Die Hard came out a few years ago, and you and I sat around and we binge watched.
Yeah, cause I had
you know all the episodes prior to that out of the box set
before the last one, Good Day to Die Hard, came out. I had the Blu-ray 4-pack of all the Die Hards and sat through them all.
I basically crammed as many non-Christmas movies as I could into my schedule, in the 3 days we had to prep for the show and everything. So, you know, Die Hard 2 isn't quite as fresh on my memory. Talking about the towers, did you realize that was the headquarter of 20th Century Fox and
yeah,
Fox Plaza?
Yeah, so if you're ever in L.A. and you go down to Century City, you can see Nakatomi Towers.
And it's still there. I bet the roof is actually intact.
Yeah, that's funny because like, all those scenes where he's in, under construction areas of the building. That building was actually under construction when they filmed all that stuff. That one office space they film in was pretty much the only finished part of the building. So they were able to use all those open areas to film the movie. And that scene where he falls down the ventilation shaft and has to grab onto the side of the vent.
Yeah.
That really happened. His stunt double slipped and fell. And
they
used that take for the for the movie.
Dude, I guess that's a butthole pucker moment.
If we had fallen, then it would have been like, yeah, it's this movie's over. Well, that's when Alan Rickman falls out of the window. They actually filmed that scene with a 30-foot drop onto an air mat, but it was all green screen and stuff. So that look of fear when he like actually falls, that's legitimate because he was like, oh shit, this is a long fall.
Yeah, I just. And the movie did phenomenal. I mean, it was produced on a $28 million budget, grossed over $140 million.
Yeah, $140 million
theatrically
on the first one.
Worldwide. I mean,
the second one made like $240 million. I mean, so I don't think any of the movies have done bad. So the second one was, Die Hard in an airport. terrorist again have taken over an airport and won't let planes land, so he's there having to save his wife again for Christmas.
I mean, at that point, it may be time to retire the wife. I mean, dude, yeah, I mean...
Yeah, she doesn't show up in any of the other movies, but there's only so much your... It's kind of like Taken. There's only so many Your Wife Gets Kidnapped episodes you can do.
Yeah, at the point that, your wife gets kidnapped or your daughter gets kidnapped or something, at that point, you should probably be like, man, I may not be the best family guy.
Yeah, how much bad stuff has happened to John McClane? It's like, the dude is always the, as he says...
I mean, he just gets shat on.
Wrong place, wrong time. That's another... theme that I've seen pop up that started with Die Hard is he always starts off clean, and by the end of the movie he's almost naked and covered in blood. Like, he gets progressively dirtier as the day goes by.
But I mean, I would think in a real life situation like that, that would be very true. I mean, you got so many films like The Walking Dead and everything. It's been 2 years, dude. How are your clothes still intact and everything else? Like,
yeah, I mean, with the Die Hard movies, they always take place in the course of like at least maybe a single day. And it's you see the toll it takes on him throughout the day, because he's always just completely jacked up by the
I mean, at that point, it's just like, dude, give me a cigarette and a nap.
And you've seen that happen like a lot of other movies too, like where they'll run that where they're just Yeah, like I said, they could professionally. The scene where they shoot the glass, and he has to walk on the glass barefoot.
Dude,
like,
that made my feet hurt. Oh,
yeah, that just cringed the first time I was watching
like,
that.
You see him in the bathroom, you know, just sitting there. Dude, Al, talk to me, man. I'm just going to sit here and pull out these shards of grass out of my bleeding-ass feet. Like, and, I mean, that just goes to show you, too, you know, the dynamic of Hal's character. And, I mean, a lot of creativity and a lot of smarts went to that because, I mean, you saw the foreshadowing when he first bumps into Hal.
Yeah.
And, you know, he thinks that, oh, you're one of the guys that, you know, one of the hostages that manages to escape somehow. And, you know, he gets a bright idea that, hey, stop shooting at John and just shoot out the glass because we know he's barefooted.
Yeah. Hans. And that's something they added that scene in, too, where because they didn't know Alan Reitman, freaking, yeah, you know what I'm talking, Alan Rickman could do an American accent. So when they found out he could do a dead-on American accent, they added that scene where he's, like, pretending to be one of the hostages. When he gets kills the German guy and gets the machine gun, too, that...
I
have a machine gun now. Ho, ho, ho. If I ever buy a machine gun, I'm going to have that shirt made. I have a machine gun now. Ho, ho, ho.
I mean, you know, there's a lot of great one-liners in that movie as well, you know, and little cameos like that and stuff that just make... to me, I mean, it's a serious action flick, but there's a lot of light humor that goes on and stuff. So, I mean, it's not like... Oh, crap, I'm going to sit here, you know, in suspense and rip my hair out the entire movie. So I think, you know, some of the comic relief there definitely did it.
That's a big thing, too, you saw in, like, the 80s action was the mixing the comedic relief.
Yeah, I mean, it's like, it's serious, but it's not over the top. Yeah.
Because there's no comedy in Rambo. I mean, it's always hardcore. And we see a lot of the modern action films have definitely continued that tradition of making it, you know, funny as well as badass. Some other people that could have been John McClane, Clint Eastwood, Burt Reynolds, Richard Greer.
Richard Greer. That's interesting.
I just cannot imagine that movie without Bruce. Have you seen the Die Hard music video?
I have seen it, but it has been a while.
Do yourself a favor. Go on YouTube. Look it up. It's by a band called Guy's Night. And I think it's called like the Ballad of John McClane or something. And it goes through the plot of all three the first three movies, and it's like this whole song about John McClane. It's hysterical.
I have to be sure to go back. I think you and I even, you know, sat around and watched that one evening when we fell down a YouTube hole. But
I'll
that's been a couple of years ago,
so people can check it out. Move on to some more action Christmas action movies. The first Lethal Weapon.
Yep, absolutely. This one here, directed by Richard Donner. We got Mel Gibson and Danny Glover, who make a badass duo.
Yeah, I mean, this is like the start of the buddy cop.
Yeah, I mean, this is one of the movies that gave, you know, freaking Bad Boys and Rush Hour and everything else kind of.
And I completely forgot that was a Christmas movie until I sat down with Q and we were talking about it on the Retrocast. It's like I completely forgot that first movie was technically a Christmas film.
Yeah. But, yeah, I mean, you got Martin Riggs. I mean, dude, Mel Gibson's character was just an absolute badass here. And, I mean, just Danny's character, too, of being, you know, kind of I'm on the brink of, you know, insanity, nobody trusts me and everything. And then, you know, toward the end of the movie, you see him come full circle. And you realize how much of a badass this guy is and how much of that special forces, you know, training really paid off and everything.
Getting too old for this shit, Riggs.
Yeah. So, I don't know, man. Lethal Weapon, it's way up there on my list.
Yeah, and that whole, like, final fight scene where he's in the front yard of Murtaugh's house. And the Christmas tree is all jacked up, and they're just out there fighting with your Christmas ornaments thrown everywhere. Oh, yeah, that movie is such a good movie. Like I said, it's been so long since I watched it until I sat down and rewatched it like a month or so ago.
Yeah.
And Gary Busey, too, is just, batshit crazy in that movie. Well, he's batshit crazy in real life, but you really see the beginning of it as the crazy albino.
So I was looking here.
Where was Die Hard? Where was it actually set in? It was out in California.
Yeah, it was set in L.A. because they even referred.
So I mean, it's very funny that, you know, here we are. We're talking non-Christmas movies. We have Die Hard set in L.A. We have freaking, you know, Lethal Weapon set in L.A.
Yeah.
I mean, all right, throwing it out. Don't fucking go to L.A. during Christmas.
Yeah.
If you're in L.A., go anywhere else in the world.
It's kind of like being in London during Christmas. You know there's going to be some Doctor Who alien invasion on Christmas every year. To stay the hell out of Christmas. I think they even did an episode.
Wouldn't that be stay the hell out of London?
Yeah. Stay the hell out
of London. Same difference.
I think they even did an episode of Doctor Who where he went there and the streets are deserted. He's like, where is everybody? He's like, oh, it's Christmas. Like, bad shit always happens on Christmas and no one comes out anymore. I thought that was kind of a hilarious nod to the Christmas routines of Doctor Who. Oh, but yeah, Lethal Weapon too. There's the lady who plays the psychiatrist that's always given Mel Gibson's character crap. She was played a reporter in Die Hard. So there's another connection to
a nice little crossover there.
Yeah, there's so many like the whole buddy cop genre we see today is it all falls back to.
And
to
I mean,
Die
I gotta
Hard.
Say, man, you know, I mean, you even have your 11. Movies like 22 Jump Street and everything else that kind of play into that role, and you know, all of those movies just I don't know what it is, man. I guess you know, just the brotherhood, or you know, watching two characters come together that can support each other that well and everything. I mean, it just jibes.
Yeah, there's so many like movie tropes that. We see in all the action movies today that weren't tropes back then, that they started with that movie. I mean, pretty much you can you know, follow any like, you know, buddy cop movie or action movie lineage back to Lethal Weapon and Die Hard.
Yeah, I mean, two movies that really set the stage and the precursor for so many other, you know, films that maybe at some later episodes we can get into. I mean, there's enough buddy cop films out there that, you know, maybe we can do a segment on those one day.
Add that to the list. Nightmare Before Christmas and being directed by
Tim Burton.
Another Tim Burton film made the Christmas list, Batman Returns.
Yeah. I got to say, man, I don't know what it is. It took me a few times to get through Batman Returns.
It's definitely
it
not.
It probably didn't help that I was trying to watch the movie at 2 a.m. every night, knowing I got to get up at 8 a.m. to be at work. But
yeah, that first 89 Batman movie was so great, and then this one was just a little bit too weird.
Yeah, I mean, dude, I will say that, you know, one thing that made this film that I'm sure most people would agree with is Michelle Pfeiffer really set the stage, you know. Yeah, I mean, her and her leather freaking Catwoman, which yeah. I think they made like, you know, I think it was like 600 different Catwoman suits at like $1,000 a piece or something really? Ridiculous.
That's the thing, too, is in her Catwoman's kind of weird, too, because, you know, in the comics and animated stuff I've seen, you know, Catwoman's always a... like a thief and stuff, but this one she was like this kind of mousy secretary who gets thrown off a building and apparently if a cat licks you when you're dead, it'll bring you back to life. That was, and then she came back all
batshit
crazy.
And then at that point you start out with 8 new lives. I mean, yeah. Dude, what it's
I mean,
a great
if that
philosophy.
Was true, every crazy cat lady would be immortal because yeah, they would never die. But yeah, I mean, that was just the weirdest concept.
They can't keep track of their cats, so they never get licked.
Okay,
can we run with that theory?
Sure. One thing, Tim Burton really didn't want to come back for this movie because he really didn't want to do it, and they talked him into it, and he's like, well, I want to do something different. So it's definitely a lot weirder than the original.
I mean, I will say, though, you know, Michael Keaton as Batman, I think he did a phenomenal job as Batman, though. You know, I kind of like the quote that he came out, you know, not too long ago, and basically, you know, was talking about freaking Christian Bale, you know, and how he felt jealous to see Ben Affleck now wearing the cape and cowl, and you know, basically Michael responded, I don't feel jealous at all. You know why? Because I am Batman. Yeah. I'm very secure in that.
Well, like, I want to see him do a the whole Dark Knight Returns where it's old Batman, and we could get Michael Keaton to reprise it. I mean. Oh, and that one, Batman's old, dude. But Michael Keaton's old now, so it could fit the part. But that was one thing that was kind of weird. Now that I didn't notice the first time when I went back and rewatched it, is like his Batman and like Batman 2, I mean, he kind of killed some people. I mean, don't show him, you know, signifying that he did it, but he set a dude on fire with the Batmobile's exhaust. I mean, that's not like a less lethal attack.
But I will say, you know, talking about the Batmobile and stuff like that, I like the way that it showed a lot of the, you know, different tools and the technological aspect of his arsenal in this film. I mean, you know, you really get to see a lot of the different gizmos and gadgets and things that you didn't necessarily see in the first film.
Yeah, there's a lot more gadgets in this. But yeah, he sets a dude on fire with the Batmobile, and then there's another dude, he sticks a bomb down his pants and, like, throws him into the sewer, and he explodes. This Batman was a little bit violent.
But you know what? If you're a superhero and you're a crime fighter, I mean, I don't understand how you have that role, and at some point you don't have, I guess, quote-unquote, collateral damage, or, I mean, sometimes some people are just going to be in the wrong place at the wrong time, and I guess despite your best efforts, you know, they're...
And the plot in this movie, too, was weird. I mean, your big bad guy is...
The Penguin.
Well, not just the Penguin, but Max Schreck, good old Christopher Walken, is... whose main goal appears to be to build a power plant that, instead of making power, sucks power so he can charge the city to sell them back the power. It's kind of a weird, convoluted plot.
So are we going to vote Penguin for mayor?
Yeah, Mayor Penguin.
Yeah.
Danny DeVito as the Penguin.
I mean, and I got to say, dude, that freaking fat suit onesie is not pretty.
Disturbing.
Yes.
That was another thing, because, you know, Penguin's always been kind of a, you know, I'm better than you type character. He's always been this kind of, you know, gentleman gangster. And in this one, he was just this disgusting mutant. You know,
yeah, I mean, it starts out with what? Idea. You know, him killing the cat, and then his parents, you know, basically banish him to the sewers to prevent that. Oh, crap, we raised a psycho kid.
Yeah. Did you notice who his parents were?
No.
His dad's Pee Wee Herman. I did not realize until I watched it again the other night. Yes. Yes, Mr. Cobblepot is Pee Wee Herman with a mustache. I was like, holy
crap.
As if
Pee Wee Herman couldn't get any, you know, creepy or anything, let's just go ahead and give him a dirty Sanchez on his face. And
and have him basically kill his son. I mean, that was so...
And then, you know, the Penguins rallying together to, you know, freaking take care of him. Raise them and everything else. Like,
yes.
Dude, I'm a big fan of penguins. But, you know, when penguins have freaking, you know,
when he trains and, like, straps missile launchers to the back of the penguins.
Yeah, and the missile launchers aren't even really missile launchers. I mean, you basically gave him a Roman candle. Said,
like, that whole end segment where he's like, all right, this whole becoming mayor thing doesn't work. And that kind of tossed back to the old 60s Batman, because there was, like, I think a couple episodes where Penguin ran for mayor back in the old TV episodes. But yeah, doing the his big plot is, I'm gonna kill all the firstborn of Gotham, and with his rocket launcher penguins. I think there's a great scene where the Batboat is, like, cruising through the sewers, and they launch a missile at it, and he just barely dodges it, and he kind of looks back like a second, like, did I really just almost get taken out by a fucking penguin?
Yeah, well, I mean, not only that.
He has this look on his face like, did I see what I thought I saw?
Yeah, and I mean, the fact that you got the freaking Red Triangle Circus gang, so you got, you know, freaking clowns and all kinds of other shit running around Gotham causing mayhem and stuff. Just
yeah,
like...
and I love the monkey grinder that has the Gatling gun in his organ that he's cranking. Yeah. And that guy, too, he's been in a bunch of stuff. He's been in some old X-Files episodes. That dude's, like, just always creepy as shit.
So, yeah, I mean, just kind of different to see, you know, freaking Penguin and Catwoman, you know, collaborating to try to kill, you know, freaking Batman and everything else. And then, you know, Bruce and Selina develop their romance. I mean, it's just a very complicated, you know, love triangle going on.
There's so much weird stuff going on. But I do love that conversation they had when they're dancing, and he says some quote that she had said to him earlier, and they finally realize who the other person is, and she's like, do we have to start fighting now? It's like almost like disappointed. Like that was kind of cool. And the rubber ducky tank. I mean, I do want a rubber ducky tank. I think that thing was pretty badass.
I mean, I will get you like a 1/10 scale rubber ducky tank, but you're not getting a full sized one.
It.
So the next time you decide to take a bath, I mean, you want to sit there and shoot, you know, freaking peas at yourself or something, I'll allow it, but you're not getting a full sized one.
That reminds me, I was Every once in a while I get bored, I'll go on eBay and just...
I don't want to hear about you bathing.
No, not eBay. And I'll type in random stuff to see what the weirdest thing I... And I was typing in haunted items one night, and someone was trying to sell a rubber ducky that was possessed by Satan. Supposedly, like, they put it in the bathtub and it melted all the other kids' toys. And
dude, that's not very Christmassy at all.
I know, but it was just the rubber ducky thing reminded me of that. It was just weird as shit.
Yeah, so, you know, how about this whole, you know, freaking Catwoman near-death scene where, you know, she claims that, oh, I got 6-9 lives, and then freaking Max shoots her 4 more times, yeah, leaving her with 2, and then, you know, freaking kisses him with the electrical taser, and...
Yeah, that movie had, like, a weird supernatural element to it that was you've never seen with Catwoman. It was just kind of... It was definitely a Tim Burton movie. I don't know how much of a Batman movie it was, but it was definitely a Tim Burton movie.
Yeah, you know, I guess overall, you know, Burton did a pretty good job with the film, but like I said, I mean, it was...
We didn't even see Harvey Dent in this one, man. You know, the original Batman movie, we had Lando Calrissian as Harvey Dent.
I mean, dude, this is Christmas, all right? He's taking the holiday off.
He's off doing the Star Wars Christmas special.
Yeah.
He had to go back to Kashyyyk for Wookiee Life Day.
Exactly. I mean, you know, you can't be multiple places at multiple times always. Yeah.
Do yourself a favor.
It is Hollywood, but I mean, there's got to be limits.
Just don't do it. Star Wars Christmas special is it's not good. Just don't do it.
Save yourself the tears and agony.
Yeah, I think there's even a Star Wars Christmas album, but it's been so long I can't remember exactly. Well, get into some more weirdness. Christmas horror theme too is another good non-Christmas.
I mean, but, you know, when we say Christmas horror, we're going to keep it lighthearted. So, you know, it's not necessarily going to be children-friendly, but, I mean...
We'll get worse as it goes, but...
Yeah.
Gremlins.
Here we go. You know, we got directed by Joe Dante, you know,
1984
Steven Spielberg,
Gremlins.
You know, the executive producer.
Came out almost the same time as Ghostbusters. It was, like, you know, pretty close together.
Yeah, I mean, they were... in fact, I think they were competing, you know, there for a while in theatrical releases for overall numbers and everything. So I wonder if the movie would have been, you know, actually grossed more and had a bit bigger success had it necessarily not have been, you know, for the, you know, the fact of... You know, competing with some of the bigger box
office
films.
Yeah, true. I mean, there was a bunch of stuff came out by that time. Yeah, but Gremlins, that, and it was, like I said, you know, kind of a little bit dark too. The commercial stuff, you see this cute fuzzy gizmo, and then that may have kind of scared some people off
too.
Well,
you know,
like it's going to be a kids' film.
The unique thing about Gremlins,
especially since, like, Steven Spielberg, executive produced it, and. And then it, we get the whole...
Well, you know, back when the movie was produced, this is actually one of the films that forced the MPAA to go back and create the PG-13 rating.
Really?
Yeah. Before, there was no PG-13. So, yeah, I mean, you had, you know, some of the scenes where the gremlin in the microwave and, you know, most of the deaths and stuff like that were, you know, off scene and stuff. Yeah. But, you know, there were some things that, you know, I think...
But can I say, Billy's mom was a total badass in that movie.
I mean, she's
like the first one to really get attacked by gremlins, and she takes out like 3 or 4 of them in her kitchen.
Yeah, I mean, you have the one with the blender, you have one get stabbed to death with a knife, then you have the...
Yeah, one ends up in the microwave getting a tan.
So,
yeah, I mean, Billy himself was kind of a pussy in the movie. I mean, he kept getting beat up, but his mom was like, you know, friggin' grabs her... Dual wields the kitchen knives and starts chopping up. She takes out like half the grill. And
although
gremlins
she almost
get
taken down by the gremlin infected Christmas tree.
Yeah, I always watch out the Christmas tree. I had a buddy with a ferret that would hide in the Christmas tree and randomly attack you. That's a good way to sneak up on you.
Dude, ferrets are very mischievous creatures.
And what about Corey Feldman too? That was one of his first big movie roles too, as the little kid that was selling the Christmas trees.
Yeah. That was funny. I mean, the tree's 8 foot tall, so, I mean, he's just running around, like, with his freaking harness, just doing the best he can to deliver trees to folks and stuff like that.
That dude's dad's a dick. Like, here, carry this tree. The tree's bigger than you are. And I'm going to make you dress up like a tree while you're doing it.
I mean, it's a tree inside of a tree.
Yeah. And what are Phoebe Cates, too, is Kate in the you know, other 80s hottie that was in a bunch of movies.
She was the bartender, right?
Yeah, she was the bartender slash girlfriend, whatever. And she always had... That's the one thing that, like, totally bums you out when you watch that movie. That whole story she tells about her dad the reason why she hates Christmas.
Oh yeah, and you know, I think that line where she said, "That's why I don't believe in Santa Claus." I think that was another one that, you know, helped spur that. You know,
yeah,
hey, we need to create a different you know rating system because you know any folks PG-13 or PG. I mean, I would say that's probably your 8-year-old and under crowd. You know, in most films, and
but the. Yeah, when she starts to like, yeah, my dad didn't show up for Christmas, and I went to light a fire, and we started smelling something, and it turns out my dad had, like, fallen down the chimney and broke his neck, and that's why I hate Christmas. I mean, that was just such a freaking downer.
Yeah.
And then I think in the sequel, too, they kind of, she has another, like, why I hate Christmas, or some bad story, too, just kind of keep, like, making fun of that, original movie. But yeah, that was like I said. That was I was like, yeah, way to make it serious here, man. I mean, the Santa Claus getting eaten by gremlins. You know, it was kind of funny. But
well, I mean, that's the thing. You know, gremlins overall is. I mean, we sat down last night and let the girls watch it. They're 10. I necessarily had no problems. I mean, which we're in a different day and age now. So yeah. I mean, the stuff and you know the special
in 84. This was like shocking.
But oh yeah, absolutely.
Nowadays, this would have been on TV unedited.
Yeah. I mean, and I guess that goes to speak to, you know, the cult following that Gremlins and everything else received.
Do you know who voiced Gizmo? Howie Mandel.
Gizmo.
Even now, that freaking, we saw that doll the other day at the talking, singing Gizmo doll at the mall.
Well, I mean, you know, this movie went to spinoff, you know, video games on the Atari, the Game Boy Color, the Commodore 64. I mean, the Gremlins really had a very fascinating franchise overall.
That's probably one of the first real comedy horror movies that okay, you know, now that you get Freddy and everything else is basically comedy horror, but I mean, this is
just more blood, gore, yeah. And I don't know, you know, Freddy and Jason still going to the whole, you know, slasher, don't have sex, don't do this, otherwise you're going to end up dying.
And the Gremlins, some of their voices were done by Michael Winslow from Police Academy, the voice sound effects guy.
That's awesome.
That's one thing I loved about the Gremlins. They weren't just a faceless monster. Like, they each of them had their
own personalities. No, they were very dynamic. I mean, even though they didn't necessarily, you know, speak a whole lot of English, I mean, just the actions, their attitudes, and everything else. I mean, dude, when they're all sitting around at the bar and they're, you know, freaking downing yes. booze and popcorn and everything.
There's one on breakdancing.
Yeah, I mean,
there's one wearing like a fedora and doing a whole like, you know, detective
fedora.
I'm the
head,
guy.
You know, freaking gangster. I'm just going to sit back here. And
the other one, Gremlin, comes up with like the penguin hand puppet and start trying to make him smile. this is the weirdest. I mean, that reminds me of some Dragon Con parties
so,
I've been to.
You know,
it looks just watch that bar scene from Gremlins. That's how Dragon Con parties always end up.
Yes. All a bunch of gremlins dressed in cosplay costumes.
Exactly. Yeah, I mean, it wouldn't just like kind of like, you know, you see The Walking Dead, it's all just like, or even some other movies like the Critters, where like all there's a horde of monsters, but they're all the same. And this one, like, they took the time to give like each gremlin like a personality, even like whatever Stripe, the main guy, like, you know, each of the little, you know, individual gremlins were. You know,
yeah, and
own,
I mean, you see
own,
the dynamic of the movie,
style.
You know, change, you know, the characters' reactions and everything else. I mean, I got to say, man, I give the movie a lot of props. I mean.
Yeah, it's been a long time since I watched that. And and Gremlins 2, as well, is like, you know, there's a lot more of those, like, personalities and kind of making fun of the original of it. I mean, I know there's even a part where, because apparently when this came out, one of the was it Ebert, I think, so this, one of the big movie reviewers like trashed it, didn't like it. Well, he makes an appearance in the second one, and the gremlins kill him, kind of making
yeah. Oh, you want to talk shit? Well, okay, we're sorry, you're gonna have to die.
It was
now.
Actually him. He was like willing to come on and do that part since he like trashed the first one. He's like, yeah, that sounds fun. I'll come on and let you kill me.
I mean, you know. Gremlins produced on $11 million budget, grossed over $153 million after the release in 1985. I mean,
and apparently
dude,
I'm,
the 1980s,
I'm in it. I
$153 million. Just give me one of those. I'm satisfied in today's economy.
That's something I didn't realize. I went back to watch it. There's like a lady like tried to get a load because their house about to rebuild. She talks about her husband. It's like My Name. I was like, whoa, I was in this movie. I forgot about it.
Yeah.
I just got edited out because you never see that character, but you know, people talk about it.
Yeah, so if you want to, you know, see the reference, you know,
it's like in like
go
the
look
first
for character Joe,
of-
and you'll see your very own Smoking Joe.
That and that when the old bank lady who's like a complete asshole to everybody, when she gets launched out of the house from the electric wheelchair lift thing, just like shoots her through the roof.
Yes.
That is hysterical, man. I think everybody like cheers at that part.
So, you know, for all you folks that may be elderly or whatever, when you got your Stairmaster 3000, just make sure no gremlins have messed with the electronics beforehand.
Yeah, don't let them turn it up to 11. It'll launch you through the roof.
I think we need one of those for our house, by the way, because to get down to the podcasting studio and everything, down two flights of stairs, I mean.
Yeah, you do.
I need to replace the handrail.
It's hard to get back up.
Hey, we could start doing beer 60s and 90s at that point.
Start doing whiskey 30.
The world is not ready.
Well, we've talked about the good in Christmas horror movies. Now let's talk about the bad.
You know what? I'm going to go out there and throw it. This movie, although horrible, I think it's so horrible that it was just downright entertaining.
Yeah, it definitely went back around to good. And there was a bunch of like Christmas horror movies on the list that we kind of narrowed down. There's Black Christmas, Silent Night, Deadly Night, and there's like a few others. But the ones we ended up watching was Jack Frost. 1997's Jack Frost.
Directed by Michael Cooney.
Yeah, the story of this movie is a serial killer who's on his way to be executed. And for some reason, like, they have to transport him somewhere to be executed. They don't have, like, a, you know, police car. It looks like an old bread van that has execution transport written on the side for some reason, just, like, you know, to advertise that there's – do they execute that many people in that state that they need a van labeled execution van?
I mean, dude, I guarantee you that if we saw an execution van rolling down the interstate today – there'd be probably a lot less murderers and people, you know, screwing up in today's society.
But the execution van loses control in a snowstorm and hits a van full of chemicals, genetic material, as they said, on their way to a lab. And now Jack Frost gets melted into the snow and becomes a living snowman.
Yeah. So I got to ask you, speaking of snowman, what's the difference between snowman and snow women?
What?
Snowballs.
And that's another bad joke you'll hear about five times in that movie.
Once again, it's so bad that it's almost funny.
Yeah, and the evil snowman, the town that he goes to get revenge on the sheriff that arrests him, is named Snowminton. I mean, this movie was so cheesy.
But, you know, I think that's one of the things that attracted the cult following to this movie is, you know, I mean, it's obvious at certain points that that's not a snowman. That's just a hot pot mitten on your hand.
Yeah, the close-up scenes of like the snowman attacking and killing people, it looks like you've taken your dinner glove, your oven glove, and started trying to choke people with. And that, too, and the whole thing looks like it was filmed in the middle of summer, and they just put fake snow in all the streets because it's – you can tell it's like nowhere near like winter when this thing was filmed.
And just so you know, the way the movie got its title, Jack Frost is the serial killer that's going to be executed. His name was Jack Frost. So yeah. That's how I guess they came up with the whole, snowman aspect.
Oh, yeah. And like I said, the snow in that movie looks so – the scenes with snow just looks so fake. It just looks like dish whatever, you know, some kind of like dish detergent that they've thrown out on the street.
And, you know, going back to some of our other previous talks of Die Hard and everything else. I mean, here you got two so-called FBI agents that show up just to be absolute assholes. But these aren't actually FBI agents.
Yeah, apparently they work for the chemical company that was making some kind of bioweapon that turns like, makes killer snow.
But apparently in Snowmonton, the snow gets so thick, so deep and everything else that you can't get choppers or emergency personnel.
Yeah. Even though there's no snow on the streets, there's just snow on the sidewalks.
And dude, it's the fake snow in this movie was just absolutely horrible.
Painted sand. I mean, it was, yeah. And then we also, yeah, we've talked about the famous Evil Dead tree rape scene. There's a snowman rape scene in this movie.
Yeah, and I gotta say, man, the freaking quote that he throws out there during that is, oh.
While he figures that out, Shannon Elizabeth, who's like, you know, American Pie and all that, is this is one of her first films. She's taking a bath Well, the bath water turns out to be made out of the snowman.
Because the whole time he can go from
solid to liquid at any point.
Yeah, I mean,
and then you see this like corn cob float up in the bathtub for some reason because his nose where he's defrosted himself to crawl in the bathtub with her. And then all of a sudden the bath water starts like, it's getting cold in here. And the bath water turns to snow.
you basically got, you know, Jill Meister saying, you know, Tommy, no, don't put the cold water in, as she's broken into the sheriff's house to... Yeah. You know, have a little hanky-panky. Once again, we kind of see that slasher theme of, hey, don't have premarital sex or anything because you're going to die.
Because he'd already shot the boyfriend with flying icicles and killed him.
Yeah, and then you got Jack Frost after the scene. Looks like Christmas came a little early this year. Well, I hope it's good for you, honey.
As he's slamming her into the wall and eventually kills her.
It's just so horrible that it's almost humorous. Almost. Not quite.
And his son, the way they finally figure out how to hurt the snowman is the sheriff hits the snowman with a bag of oatmeal that his son had made for him, and it burns him. He's like, what's in the snowmeal? Well, I didn't want you to get cold, so I put antifreeze in it. So I'm like, dude, the kid was trying to, like, kill his dad, I think.
Well, I mean, my thought on that is, I mean, you know, kids will be kids. So, I mean, how often do, you know, kids run out, they start mixing some mud in some pots or something and be like, oh, I made brownies or whatever. I mean, you just know that, hey, if you see a kid that small at a stove or something, it's probably not going to turn out to be.
The mom was sitting there watching him. I'm like, yeah, I think the mom's, like, secretly trying to get rid of the husband. Yeah, go ahead. Put the antifreeze in Daddy's breakfast, Billy, or whatever his name was.
Well, I mean, you know, I think he realizes that it's not food because he's like, you know, you can tell the sarcasm in his voice where he's like, oh, no, go ahead, Billy, fill it all the way up, blah, blah, blah. You know, I'll be sure to eat this at lunch, knowing good and well that's never going to happen.
Yeah, so instead of, like, just taking antifreeze and, like, throwing buckets of it at the snowman, they fill the back of a truck up full of pool
and
of
you know what I think
antifreeze.
Funny and- about that, he's just like, all right, you got 5 minutes to get to the hardware store. Fill this up with antifreeze. Well, the dude's, like, over there. 5 minutes, you're not going to fill an entire truck bed with antifreeze.
I mean, can't you just, like, pour some in a super soaker? Yeah, I mean, can they have not, like, have weaponized it better than, yeah, just pile it all up in the back of the truck, and I'm going to fight the snowman and try to throw him in the back of your truck.
But then, like, again, that wouldn't have made for a very good movie, now would it?
I mean, but some antifreeze water balloons, when snowman attack us, I'm going for the super soaker backpacked edition full of antifreeze. We're not making a kiddie pool full of antifreeze to fight the snowman.
I don't know that we'll survive.
It doesn't snow
here. You could very well be the death of us, Joe.
It only snows here like once a year, so I think we're good.
Yeah, but when it does, it shuts down the city for an entire week.
And then the snowman slowly picks us all off.
I don't know what more to say about this movie. I mean, I guess, you know, I can say the movie is worth watching just strictly for the one-liners and, you know, the cheesy effects. But if you're going into it looking for a cinematic experience, then this is probably way below any B movies that you're used to seeing.
Oh, yeah, that too in the wreck scene when the two trucks collide. You never see the trucks collide. All they did was, like, they spin the camera to make it look like the trucks are rolling over. You never see, like, they were too cheap or too broke to, like, show an actual crash scene. So they just spun the camera and made it look like old Star Trek style to make it look like the trucks are flipping.
Well, I mean, you and I often joke about, you know, directing our own, you know, freaking horror flick and stuff. You tell me, Mr. Producer, how are you going to go through and, you know, spend those effects?
Just use some stock footage. Just go get some stock footage. Or use some Hot Wheels cars. I mean, I think Hot Wheels cars would have been a better effect than the fake crash scene from this movie.
But then again, I think that would take away from some of the ambiance of the movie.
It was funny. Since when this came out, like, there was a family film that came out nearly the same time called Jack Frost about a living snowman. I wonder how many kids, like, got the wrong edition and just... completely burnt their minds.
What are we watching today? Oh, we're going to watch Jack Frost.
Yeah, that Disney film, Jack Frost. Yeah, let's watch this, Billy. And I'm like, oh, no, this kid's going to have nightmares now. He's afraid of snow cones.
And once again, we kind of get to see somebody get killed in a Christmas tree. Once again, another recurring theme from one of our other
I forgot about that, where he kills that lady and then decorates her up like a Christmas tree. She's like all hung with like the lights and has the star on her head and stuff.
Oh, it's so cheesy.
Oh, what about another good Christmas action movie, more from the more modern era, The Long Kiss Goodnight with Gina Davis and Samuel L. Jackson.
You know, this is probably one of the few Jackson films that I have not seen.
Oh, it is excellent. I mean, it's Sam is like such a badass in this movie. Because basically the plot of the movie is Gina Davis's character kind of woke up in this town. They found her on like a beach, and she has no memory of her previous life and has not been able to find. You know, no one's ever reported her missing. No one's been. So she's been hiring detectives to try to find out who she really is. And Samuel Jackson is this private detective that she hires to, you know, find out who her real life is. Well, it turns out she's a like CIA hitman that basically got, you know, tore up on her last mission and had like a head injury and like completely forgot her previous life. So when she goes off to try to discover her old life with Sam, it turns out that like there's this, you know, that she was in the middle of this mission and there's all these people, there's like some kind of terrorist attack on like Canada or something. And
wait, not LA this time?
No, this one's in Canada. They had to have snow. It was Christmas. But yes, she's like Charlie Baltimore, I think, is who she actually turns out to be. And she turns into like, once she gets her memories back, she's like a complete badass and is like taking people out like right and left and throwing knives and smoking cigars and everything else.
A lady that smokes cigars after my own heart.
And Samuel Jackson is kind of like the John McClane diehard role, because he gets so fucked up in this movie. Like, I said, there's like at least three times you're sure he's dead and they've like left him to be dead, and then he comes back and like saves the day. And there's like one part where they're going to try to set off this bomb and make it look like that she is the one that did it. So they've got Sam in his car in this truck that they're going to use his body as the scapegoat. And he ends up waking up in the back of this truck and drives out the truck and runs over all these terrorists. He's like, "You can't kill me, motherfuckers."
I was about to say, so, you know, in true, having not seen the movie, I mean, do we see Samuel L. Jackson in his true Samuel L. Jackson form?
Oh, yeah. Definitely he has some of those good one-liners
and
speeches.
So definitely a movie I'm going to have to go back and watch then.
You can't kill Sam. I mean, he got so jacked up in this movie, but he, like I said, he always comes out in the end. So is there any other Christmas movies that comes to your mind that maybe didn't make our original list here?
I mean, for me personally, not really. You know, I'm more of the Halloween is my Christmas. So that's, outside of what we talked about, you know, Silent Night, Deadly Night.
Rambo First Blood was a Christmas movie.
Really?
Yes. Like I said, I'm looking back at my original list that we had to chop down to something we could talk about. But yeah, the first Rambo First Blood, when he goes to that town and just blows up the whole town and gets into the war with the town sheriff, it's Christmas time. There's the whole town's decorated up as Christmassy.
Interesting. Huh.
There's also Reindeer Games with Ben Affleck. Have you ever seen that one?
No, I don't think I've seen Reindeer Games.
Yeah, this is pre-Batfleck Affleck, where he's basically he's a prisoner who is a roommate was in prison, was like a security guard or did something for this casino, and he has this hot, like, you know, girl who's been writing him letters. Well, his buddy dies like right before he gets out of prison, so, you know, when he comes out and the girl's there waiting on his buddy, he's like, "Oh yeah, I'm so and so," because he knew all like the letters and stuff she had sent him. And so, but it turns out it's all like a setup. This girl really represents this gang who wants to rob this casino. And since he knows, the other guys just know all the security measures, you know, they go to use him to plan the robbery. And he really doesn't know crap because they all think he's this other guy.
It's and almost it's like, a precursor to Ocean's 11.
Yeah, pretty much. I think they even try to rob the casino dressed as Santa Claus's too. It's because it is Christmas. So yeah, it's definitely got some weird Christmassy stuff in it too. Charlize Theron is the girl that tricks him up. Behind Enemy Lines, another Christmas movie.
That one just came to mind as I was looking over some of our previous notes and potential topics for discussion.
Yeah, we got the Last Boy Scout, Night of the Comet, Red, Iron Man 3. There you go. Iron Man 3 is another Christmas, a modern Christmas action movie with Santa Iron Man.
I don't know. I like some of the Boondock Saints Christmas stuff that I keep seeing floating around.
Yeah, we'll have to...
Show me the list, fat man.
Yeah, we'll save our Boondock Saint episode for St. Patty's Day.
That's got to happen before long.
Well, I think that about wraps things up here. Have a Merry Christmas, people, and we'll be right back with some Beer 30.
Happy holidays.
There's one damn holiday that I can't stand. It ain't Halloween or Thanksgiving or even April Fools, but it'll surely make a fool out of every man. Ha! If I ain't drunk, then it ain't Christmas. You know where to stick those jingle bells. If I ain't hammered, it ain't Hanukkah. And all you motherfuckers go to hell. If I ain't cockeyed, it ain't Kwanzaa. Joy to the world, Jack and Coots. If I ain't drunk, then it ain't Christmas. Cause I ain't never anything but broke.
Hey man, it's almost that time.
What time is it?
Beer 30.
The Booze Hounds return.
Ho ho ho, and welcome to Beer 30.
Yeah, this is a very special edition of Beer 30, huh? Yeah.
If you haven't figured it out by now, the whole episode's Christmassy. So we found a
Christmas
beer.
I mean, it's not that Christmassy. I mean,
well, it's as Christmassy as I get.
it's Christmassy with an explicit tag.
I'm screwed, y'all. But yeah, since we had to do a Christmas beer for this episode, we checked out Sweetwater Festive Ale, 2014 edition.
What? That only makes sense since we're in the year 2014 and beer never hangs around long enough to age. Fuck.
Especially they only make a limited supply of this for Christmas.
And
I know what you're saying. We've drank a lot of Sweetwater beers. You know, no, they're not sponsoring the podcast yet. But yeah, if y'all know anybody that wants to put a word in, yeah, we'll gladly take a Sweetwater sponsorship.
Hell yeah, we will. So you want to tell the good folks about our festival with brewed with spices?
Yeah, and I like their description here. It is an ale. It's brewed only once a year with a, and they say this unique winter ale will slide down your chimney. sounds dirty.
Don't talk about my chimney.
Using a sleigh load of rich malts coupled with a taint of cinnamon.
Fuck yeah, taint. That's awesome. What an asshole. What an asshole company would say taint.
Yeah, taint of cinnamon and mace. And this bad boy will keep you warm all winter long.
I mean, I got to say, I mean, the instant I poured, you know, the beer and took my first sip, I mean, instantly you got that warm, cozy feeling running down your esophagus, down to your belly, and it was something magical. And I got to say, this is a lot less spicy and over the top as some of the other festive style beers that we've had.
A lot of the stuff that's brewed with spices, just you get that overpowering stuff. We found that with a lot of the Oktoberfest beer, or not Oktoberfest, but the
Warlock,
like the pumpkin spice shit. Yeah, yeah, fucking Warlock was just too
almost
much
like
spice.
Licking Santa Claus asshole or something with as much nutmeg and flavoring as was there.
Name for a beer, like with Santa Claus's asshole. I think I'm gonna brew that when I start homebrewing. A good
you
batch
just gotta
of
make
Santa
sure
Claus's
it's a brown
asshole.
L. Yeah, a brown L for the brown eye. You know what I'm saying. And can we use the word taint in there somewhere, too?
Sure.
Okay, sweet. So,
Merry Taintmas.
The hell's wrong with us?
We've been in this basement too long, drinking beer and smoking cigars.
You say it like it's a bad thing, man.
My brain's starting to melt,
yeah. So, yeah, here we are. We went on some kind of epic tangent, and, you know, we didn't even talk about the beer hardly. So, you know, my thoughts and opinions here are I really enjoy this beer. I could definitely see myself sitting around a bonfire or something when it's chilly outside, and this is going to be something that, you know, even the folks that typically would not gravitate to the craft beer scene – I think this is something probably everyone could enjoy.
Yeah, it's a little dark for an ale, but yeah, it's definitely got that warming winter feel. We should, you know, like I said, a nice campfire sitting by your fireplace. This is a good winter beer to try.
So at some point, we're going to have to do the fire pit edition of the podcast.
Yes, you need to hurry and put that thing together.
It's need together, to burn dude. Stuff. It just hasn't been outside yet, okay? I'm trying to protect it from the elements. Fuck, I've already seen what happens when we smoke cigars. They go away. They turn to ash.
That thing's made of metal. It's not going to go away.
Okay.
And you also get, when you buy the Sweetwater Festival, you get the nice wax-dip bottle, too, which can be a pain in the ass to open. Do you have any professional tips on how to open the wax tip.
Here's the thing. You know, these bottles, I think we got lucky because the wax was thin enough that you were able to get the bottle opener underneath the top, and it popped off. The only thing you got to watch out is the residual wax. Don't let that fall into your beer and into your beer cup. Surprised.
The thing is, with these wax bottles, if you're pulling them straight out of your fridge, dip the put the tip under some hot water and soften up that wax first. Because if you try to...
Hell no, man.
Yeah, because if you try to peel it off...
Quit enabling these people to be pussies, all right? Damn it.
Believe me, we've run into this problem before.
We're cigar smokers.
If you're
We're badass. Fuck.
If you're trying to open it when it's still cold, the wax is brittle and it'll just come off in little pieces instead of coming off in one big hunk, which is what you want it to do.
Hey, my bottle did fine. I think you got a defective wax bottle there, my friend.
No, this is that last time we opened the happy ending and when it was cold and was chiseling plastic for an hour.
I think after that point, though, we had already... I think our level of intoxication came into play.
Yeah, but once you figured out the warm the tip, you know, like all things in life, you want to keep a warm tip. don't want your tip getting cold.
Yeah, and when we're talking about running your beer under warm water, just the tip.
Yeah, you don't want to get the whole bottle warm, just the tip.
Although I will say, as this beer, you know, starts to come up closer to out of the fridge at about 38 degrees, now I would say it's probably 45, 46. It starts having some chocolatey notes and stuff that come out, so, you know, I personally prefer this beer to be on the warmer side than right out of the fridge.
This one didn't have a suggested temperature like some do. And this is also an 8.5%.
But guess what? These folks know how to use Google, so they can figure that shit out for themselves.
This is also an 8.5% beer. So it's one of your more stout ones. So if you're having a good holiday, you maybe want to...
Yeah, this may actually get you through spending all this time with your relatives and family and whatnot.
That's the only way I visit my family is I got to get you a few shots in me first to make it tolerable.
So, Joe, what are you going to give this on our official...
The untapped rating
review.
I like it. This is definitely a 4 for me.
I'm going to venture to say 4.5. I might even give this one a 5. Who knows?
Yeah, for 2 or 3 of these.
Check me out on Untapped. HXC Punisher.
go up to a 5.
You can see my review for yourself.
Yeah, put this in your Christmas stockings for your beer nerd family and friends. You know, put it under your Christmas tree. Hey, instead of pouring out milk and cookies for Santa, pour him a beer. I mean, I'm sure the dude could use a beer after all that work he's done.
Beer and cookies?
Damn right.
Hell yeah. I think we're on to something.
And with that, I guess we'll wrap up and we'll be right back with some science.
This time I'm not going to say stay tuned. I'm going to say happy holidays.
Happy holidays.
Holidays. Yeah, nice. Cool.
And welcome back to Science. Today we got a special episode of Science. We actually have a guest here to talk to us about some of the science of fitness since, you know, New Year's coming up. Everyone always wants to do a diet or exercise program for New Year's. It's like the number one, you know, New Year's resolution. Yeah.
So how do I get my fat ass on with maintaining my existing weight and everything else without, you know, putting on 500 pounds?
Yeah, so we have brought in our, my trainer, actually, Jonathan. Introduce yourself, sir.
Hey, guys. My name is Jonathan Mummert. I'm with Mummert Fitness, also part of the groups with Lift the Bar Community Online. And my specialty is in training athletes and female fitness and fat loss.
Sweet. So what's a little bit about, you know, what, you know, like you said you specialize in certain things. You know, what's some things that... Yeah, generally that you do for a client this time of year?
Well, typically, you know, the first thing we're going to ask is, you know, what are your goals? A lot of times people will find a personal trainer and the trainer wants to tell them what all they're going to do for them. But really what it boils down to is what are your goals? So, you know, if a client comes to me and, you know, not everyone at this time of the year is necessarily trying to lose weight. So I may have a client say, you know, hey, I feel like it's Christmas time. You know, I'm trying to put on some weight. I know I'm going to eat a lot around the holidays and I want to put some muscle.
Got to fit in that Santa costume, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you know, Santa Claus comes to me and he's like, hey, man, I got to, you know, just shed a few pounds for the reindeer, but I still got to keep that fat, fit look. No, but yeah, I mean, it depends on, you know, what are your goals? What are the client's goals? If it's weight loss, you know, obviously around this time of year, that is going to be one of the bigger ones. A lot of people set their resolutions. I'm gonna do whatever I want through Christmas, and then come the new year, I am going to buckle down and I'm gonna just do right. And I always tell people, I mean, you can start buckling down now, and you can actually do so and still enjoy the holiday food.
I was gonna say, you know, that's always my problem. I always make great resolutions, but then, you know, the whole buckling down thing never actually happened. So I just continue to consume beer and cigars and all-you-can-eat wings all throughout the rest of the year. And before you know it, a whole nother year comes around so I can resolve again.
Yeah. and that's actually pretty common. It's funny. I was out with some friends the other night, and we were talking about how our diet begins on Monday, and it begins the next Monday and the next Monday. And you kind of get the idea.
This week,
there.
I mean it.
A lot of people will tell me, you know, hey man, I'm gonna wait till after the holidays, and then I'm really gonna hit it hard. And you know, I always tell people the best time to start is now. It doesn't mean you have to throw everything out. I mean, I can guarantee you that over the course of Christmas Day, I'm gonna consume far more calories than I probably quote should. But I kind of plan for it purposefully. I make sure that, and I'll talk a little bit about Joe's programming here in a little bit, and Joe's had great success. But one of the biggest things I tell people is you don't have to, you know, tell yourself, I can't eat. I cannot enjoy food. The holidays are coming up. You know, I need to sit in another room and eat with the kids at the kiddie table so that I only get those portions. No, I mean, absolutely enjoy yourself. But be smart about it. You know, one of the things I tell people is if you know Christmas is on a Wednesday, you know, maybe Sunday through Tuesday, you just are really strict. You cut back on the calories. You make sure you eat really clean. And that way Wednesday, you can really enjoy yourself and have some fun and then get right back on it Thursday. You know, there's no point in punishing yourself because you slipped up and you had an extra piece of cake. A lot of people will also think, hey, I should probably go to the gym and jump on the stair climber and the elliptical and try to at least do one for an hour each one because I got to burn off all these calories I ate. And that's absolutely not the case. You know, it's all about planning and being smart about it. Sometimes you're going to slip up and you're going to have food that's unplanned. But my whole motto is fitness so that you can enjoy life, and sustainable fitness, stuff that you can carry on. And if you can't enjoy life and you can't enjoy food, I don't understand why you're trying to work out and stay around longer.
Yeah, that's one thing. Like I said, a lot of people are scared to get into a program because they think they're going to have to eat, you know, rabbit food.
Well, I think you see it far too much, you know, especially late night infomercials where box food delivered to your door guarantee, you know, 50 pounds of weight loss per week, blah, blah, blah.
Or whatever.
Yeah, that's because usually that food arrives at your door and you realize you don't want to eat it and you forgot to go grocery shopping and then you've lost weight. It's just, you know, yeah, people are trying to, they're going to try to make money off of gullible people. And really what it boils down to is all of these fad diets and all of these miracle pills and all of these things you see on TV, really what the ultimate goal is, the only reason any of that will work is because you ate less calories than you burned throughout the day. A common thing we see in the fitness industry are people are told, you know, hey, you got to avoid carbs. Don't eat any carbs. Carbs make you fat. If you even look at a carb, you're going to blow up. I mean, it's, you know, or fats. Don't eat fats because obviously fat makes you fat. But that's not the case. Ultimately, what it's all about is at the end of the day, making sure that you consume less calories than you burn. If you want to lose weight. Now, if you want to gain weight, you want to obviously do the opposite of that. Now,
and I'm really good at that part.
I think we know how to do the gaining weight part.
Yeah, the gaining weight, I can do that all day long. But, you know, one thing I do want to say, though, is you can't oversimplify it either. People want to say that nutrition is as easy as this or it's as easy as that. And unfortunately, it's not. But at the same time, there are certain things that, you know, you want to be weary of. If someone's telling you carbohydrates are bad for you, you kind of need to find a better source. If someone's telling you fats are bad for you and they're killing you, you need to find a better source. You know, I hear that all the time. People tell me protein's going to mess up their liver, and they come up with these studies that, you know.
It's not the protein messing up my liver. It's the beer.
Yeah, exactly. If your protein shake consists of IPA, then, you know, that may be part of it.
That's a good thing.
Yeah.
I don't like IPA, so I'm good.
Well, speaking of, like, alcohol, what about, you know, drinking and, you know, working out and dieting and all that?
You know, to be honest, it really depends on the goals. For the first you know, first off, I think that, you know, if you want to enjoy a glass of wine or something, that's absolutely fine. If you want to go out with your buddies and have some drinks on the weekend, that can be okay. But again, it depends on your goals. When I work with athletes, specifically speaking, I tend to tell them they need to limit it a lot more, especially when they're in season and they're training pretty hard. I tell them to try to limit it. I never tell them absolutely no drinking. Also, if you're working, and I do not work with this type of person often, I actually have the utmost respect for them, but bodybuilders and fitness models, that's a whole different realm. I mean, especially when you're getting close to competition time. But for the most part, I'm working with, you know, everyday people, student athletes and stuff like that. So it's
literally
not
average Joes like me.
Yeah, literally average Joe. Yeah. But no, I mean, it's people like Joe. And I'll talk about a little bit about Joe, because I absolutely love Joe's story and where he's come along. And I'm really proud of him being his trainer. But yeah, I mean, Joe will tell you, I've told him, hey, when he lost his first 25 pounds, let's meet up at the cigar shop, smoke a cigar and celebrate, and I'll get you a beer. People think that sounds absolutely crazy, but the thing is, I want to show Joe that, you know, fitness is about, you know, sustainability and enjoying life. Joe's not trying to go out and run a, you know, 5K. Joe's not trying to compete in the next fitness.
And Guinness has vitamins.
Guinness does have vitamins.
It's got me over the flu a few times.
Yeah. What it really was is you just don't remember having the flu.
Oh, no, trust me. I remembered.
But, yeah, I mean, alcohol consumption obviously should always be in moderation. You know, if I've got a client who's like, hey, man, I like to drink every single night. I usually have about 8 to 12 beers. Yeah, we've got a different problem we need to address.
Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah, we'll talk later after the podcast, man. I got your back. I know some people.
Damn it.
This is an intervention, Brad.
But yeah, I mean,
I knew it was a setup.
I told you guys when we first hopped on here, I was eating a soft pretzel, which, oh my goodness, has carbs, and I'm also drinking a Cabernet right now. So, you know, absolutely. I think, you know, alcohol is fine. Moderation, control yourself. One thing I like that a guy named Alan Aragon said, this guy's amazing when it comes to the science behind nutrition and behind training. But, you know, essentially he gave a warning one time that, you know, if you're one of those people who, after drinking a few drinks, you all of a sudden you start craving, you essentially get the munchies, like on the alcohol munchies. And, you know, some people get that. Then, yeah, you may want to consider, especially if you're trying to lose weight, maybe drinking isn't the best thing for you. But again, in and of itself, a few drinks here and there to celebrate, I think that's absolutely fine. It's ultimately it boils down to, are you consuming less than you're burning if you're trying to lose weight? So, you know, that's kind of the short answer there for the alcohol.
Yeah, because like I said, I've cut way back on my drinking, just because I've been kind of hardcore on my diet. Pretty much now I only drink on at conventions and when we're doing this podcast. So I'll have my two beers a month when we're recording our beer 30. But other than that, I save it for special occasions.
Well, it's a good point you brought up, Joe, because, you know, one of the things we talked about recently, you know, for those listening, Joe and I went out to celebrate one time also when he had dropped down. I think it was when you hit about the 40-pound mark in weight that you had lost. And we went out and celebrated with all-you-can-eat wings, which some people are probably like, what in the hell is this trainer thinking? But no, I mean, we went out and we enjoyed ourselves. But I also had told you, you know, leading up to that, let's be really strict. And afterwards, we're going to be strict. You know, one of the points too we brought up was Christmas time's around the corner and I want you to enjoy it. I want you to have fun. And, you know, our goal was to get you below 50 before the new year, below 50 pounds lost, and we're almost there. So I said, let's just be really strict leading up. Let's go ahead and meet your goals before the new year. And I, you know, you can tell everybody on the podcast, I'd absolutely encourage you to enjoy the hell out of Christmas dinner and, you know, really enjoy yourself, enjoy your family, and then we'll get right back on it the next day.
Oh yeah, we're gonna have a big party when we get to big goal.
You know, somebody like me that's, you know, almost absolutely clueless to, you know, nutrition and everything else. Let me ask you, what are some ways that people can kind of keep track of, you know, their nutrition, what they're intaking? I mean, honestly, I have no clue as far as what I consume on a day-to-day basis.
One of the first things I'll do with people is actually outside of, you know, the first few weeks, generally speaking, I work mainly on getting your mindset right about attending and making it to the gym regularly, and I'll make little minor changes. But ultimately, during that time, what I tell people to do is just start recording how much you eat. Record what you're eating throughout the day. And I, you know, Joe, I told him, I was like, even if you're chewing a stick of bubble gum, and I say that jokingly, you know, but what I tell people is if you record it, you start realizing how much you're really consuming, especially, you'd be surprised how many people come back to me and they say, dude, I had no clue that I was actually eating more calories through snacks throughout the day than I was through my lunch and dinner combined, because you just don't pay attention when you're doing that. So yeah, part of it's just being
my
mindful.
Schedule. I end up eating a lot of like eating on the road a lot. And until I started actually logging that stuff and realizing, oh crap, this is like a 1,000-calorie meal. You know, I was only eating twice a day, but I've been eating like a 4,000-calorie diet.
So this may be, you know, a topic for a different conversation, but you know, what are some of the methods? I mean, you know, just look on the back and, you know, keep a written log, or are there apps out there to help people?
One app that I really like, and there's a few out there, but it's MyFitnessPal. And you've got to be careful because sometimes you do have to check, because I think one time I put a cheeseburger in or something and it said it was only like 400 calories. And I promise you it was way more than 400 calories. So you got to be careful. But yeah, for the most part, man, most people really don't understand. And I could talk on this for, you know, 30, 45 minutes straight easily about, you know, what calories are and where they, you know, what they come from, you know, how many are in carbs, how many are in fats and proteins. But ultimately what you want to do is record what you're eating each day. And I tell people a simple method, and this is not the best way to do it, but ultimately on air with me having limited time, pretty much for guys, you take how much you weigh and you multiply it by 10 or just add a zero to it. And I usually tell girls to multiply it by 8 or 9. And then that's about how many calories they're probably burning throughout the day. Now that's an oversimplified method. If you work with any trainer, they're going to take it a few more steps. They're going to see how active you are. They're going to see, you know, what you do throughout the day, what type of lifting you're doing, but ultimately you add that zero to the end of it. And then I tell most people to start recording from there, trying to hit that number. Actually, if they're trying to lose weight, I usually tell them to take about 300 calories off of that. Try to hit that number. And then, you know, about once a week, I'll tell them, you know, now kind of weigh yourself, also take pictures. And if you're noticing that you're losing weight, then we're doing pretty well. If you notice you're staying the same, then, you know, we need to maybe take a few more calories off there and kind of go from there. But that's a very oversimplified. That's for somebody who's just like, look, I'm not getting a trainer. I just kind of want a basic understanding. And you kind of start there. So recording your meal, adding that zero for guys to the end of it. So essentially I weigh 250 pounds. You know, I add that zero. So 2,500 calories minus 300 is about where I would start at. And then if I notice, you know, hey, a week from now, I actually weigh 2 pounds less, you know, I would kind of go from there. And then about every 5 to 10 pounds, I'd kind of reassess. So if say I got down to 240, well, now I'd say 2,400 calories minus 300 and kind of go that way. And that kind of keeps you from overdoing it as well. And that's one warning I want to give people too. If you're trying to cut out 1,000, you know, 1,500 calories out of your meal a day, you really are potentially setting yourself up for failure. There is a such thing as, you know, kind of shooting too far for, especially when you first start out.
And that that FitnessPal app too, that's what I've been using. It's so convenient since it's on your phone. You can even scan barcodes if you're you know, buy something like a can of something that has a barcode on it, and it, you know, will normally have all that, you know, calorie information stuff preloaded. And it's just, you know, instead of trying to like write it down and figure it out later, it's so much easier just to log it as I'm doing it. And like I said, you can set your calorie limits you're going for, and it'll you know, track how close you are to hitting your limit for the day. And yeah, as you put in your exercise you're doing, it'll add calories and stuff like that.
Yeah, MyFitnessPal, if you will actually do it, I tell people, find a friend to do it with. If you've got someone encouraging you, someone working with you, again, if you're not going to use a trainer. Another thing I want to let people know is a lot of people don't realize that trainers are now starting to kind of get wise to the fact that some people can't meet them in the gym. So we've started what's called a, you know, essentially an online personal trainer. And what that consists of is you work with a trainer, but they kind of give you the workouts to do. They kind of monitor. Some trainers are obviously, as with anything, with any industry, some are better than others. I will tell you, if you're looking for a trainer, I do it, as well as there's a group that I'm a part of called Lift the Bar. All the trainers in there are phenomenal. They've actually chosen after their certification to go through that group as continued education, so they can be the best of the best. Also, Elite Fitness Mentoring. if you reach out to those groups and tell them what your goals are and you say, hey, you know, I've got these fitness goals. I heard Mummert talking on the podcast, and I know he doesn't really work with guys who are trying to get shredded. The owner of Lift the Bar has got Shredded by Science, and he works with, you know, some guys in their 20s, 30s looking to really shred up. But again, those are places you can contact if you're, you know, wanting someone to kind of help you through that process and a professional. If you're not quite there yet and you just kind of want to watch what you're doing and get a little bit healthier, the two biggest things I tell people when they're asking for my two cents, my quick advice is kind of what I told y'all on the MyFitnessPal and the calorie tracking, and really just start moving more. I mean, I've told Joe before, he works the night shift sometimes and he's sitting at his desk. And what did I tell you, Joe, while you're sitting there?
Yeah, just get up, you know, at least every hour and move around some. Then don't just sit there for your, you know, your full shift. Yeah. Yeah. If you can stand, if you can walk around your cubicle or, you know, whatever, you know, at least get, you know, the blood flowing here and there.
Yeah. And that's dead on. That's what I tell everyone. Another thing, especially at holiday season, y'all may like this. I can't tell you how many times I've seen people get in fights and, I mean, just crazy, crazy ass people in parking lots who, you know, they fight over a freaking parking spot. And I tell all my clients, look, park as far out as you can and get some extra calories burned, get some extra walking in, and try moving for once rather than fighting, wasting, you know, oxygen over yelling at someone for getting your spot. You know, that magical spot up front.
Hey, so
that
it had my name on it.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, you know, let someone else get the spot with your name on it, man. You know, let them tell them Merry Christmas and you're going to walk. And just know that while you're mad at them and you want to cuss them out, that you're going to live a healthier life because you're actually
I'm
choosing
to get in better shape. Then I'm going to beat their ass later.
Hey, I'm already in shape. Round is a shape.
That is, round is a shape. That's true.
Well, as we've said, you know, people that this time of year that start the workout programs, yeah, statistically, you know, don't really stick with them. You know, after the, you know, they make that huge jump and then fall off. What's some suggestions for people that, you know, to maintain their New Year's resolution and not, you know, get into it and then just kind of fall away?
That's actually a great question. I was on the phone earlier tonight, actually, with a good friend of ours, a family friend, and I've started, I wrote a program design for her. And long story short, one of the things I told her was, you've got to let me know if we're doing something that you absolutely hate. Now, I only say this to people I'm working with who, again, you're just looking to feel better. You want to look better. You're not necessarily competing. Now, if I'm working with an athlete and they tell me, hey, man, I don't like squats, I'm like, okay, well, why don't you get further in the hole? And then you can tell me about it when we're done. You know, it again depends on the clientele. But I always tell people, you got to enjoy it. I mean, if it's going to be something you stick with, find something you enjoy doing. You know, if I've had somebody come in before and they had a bad day and we were supposed to do some upper body work and we were going to do bench press and we were going to do some shoulder fly, you know, all these things and shoulder raises, shoulder press. And I said, you know what, let's have a little fun with it. I know you're stressed. And we went over and hit the heavy bags for a little bit, kicked the heavy bags and just kind of vented. You know, people always talk about, and you'll see these hashtag getting work done or putting work in and no rest days and all this crazy nonsense. And then I'll watch, you know, kind of like Joe said, I'll watch somebody get fired up and they don't stick with the resolution because pretty much everything they're doing is making them absolutely more miserable than when they first started. And if that's the fitness track you're on, you're probably not going to stick with it. I mean, there's only so much you can long for a six pack before it becomes a six pack of IPAs, going back to that topic.
All right, well, I think we're about out of our time here, and we'll wrap this up. How can people get a hold of you if they want to, you know, get some training or some advice?
On Facebook, you can look for me. It's Mummert, Mummert Fitness. That's my Facebook page. Also, like I said, I'm affiliated with Lift the Bar. It's a fitness group on Facebook. You can also find their website. And then also Elite Fitness Mentoring. That's another site that I am affiliated with. So you can find me through that. Also, again, like I said, you know, I absolutely recommend working with those sites. If you're wanting an online trainer, they can tell you where to go. I feel free to message me. I'll tell you where to go. But ultimately, our goals are to make sure that you are on the right fitness track for you. We personalize it. We make sure your numbers match you. We make sure your workouts match you. And ultimately, we want to make sure, like I said earlier in the segment, that it's a sustainable fitness goal, not just an attainable one.
And you can always email us or tweet us, and we'll put you in contact with Jonathan here. And thanks for your time, sir. Thanks for educating us on some science.
Very good information.
Joe, I talked to you about it earlier, and I meant to mention this. I apologize. I forgot. For anyone who contacts you guys directly or myself directly and mentions the Cigar Nerds podcast, I will actually do a 2-week free program design and a little bit of help with getting you on the right track as far as what to eat and stuff. So essentially, that'd be one Skype call and a 2-week program design for you.
Hey, I'm Brad Jackson from the Cigar Nerds, and I need nutrition counseling.
I got you, man.
We'll see you this weekend.
All right. See you guys.
See you.
And now it's time for all things nerdy in Nerd News.
And welcome back, folks. We are now at the Nerd News segment.
Nerd News!
And this time around, we're going to do things a little bit differently. So we've got some music for your listening pleasures.
Yeah, to fit in with our un-Christmas themes. If you're like us and you're sick of hearing the same fucking Christmas songs over and over again at the malls or at the store, or here at the cigar shop, since Tim's got it on the Christmas playlist, you need some like untraditional Christmas songs just to mix up your holiday pleasure. And we've kind of hit a highlight of songs for you folks.
Yeah, we've definitely fallen down some deep YouTube holes here. So, you know, up first, I'm going to go ahead and open it up with some
DJ Brad,
hair.
What's first on the playlist?
Oh, well, you know, folks, I think we're going to go ahead and open it up with a little bit of Sniper. And here we go.
What do you want for Christmas, little girl?
I don't know. What do you want?
I
want
to rock.
That girl wants to rock.
Oh, yeah. If you like 80s hair metal, this is a good Christmas song for you.
I don't even want to talk over this, man. I just want to bust out some of these guitar riffs. Like, no, what are we doing with all the guitars in the other room? Like, bring them out here.
Yeah, if you haven't seen the video of this, Sniper is Chris Hardwick, one of our nerd heroes. He did it back in the day when he was working for G4. This was a clip they played on G4.
Yeah, unfortunately I missed it when it aired then, but I mean, we're going to go ahead and link to YouTube and everything else once we wrap up the segment, right?
Oh, yeah, yeah. We spent a lot of time today building a YouTube playlist of all our favorite Christmas songs. So that will be up on our Facebook page when this airs. So you'll be able to see the full versions of all these songs we've talked about and then a few others that we didn't have time for.
Yeah. So, I mean, that definitely got my adrenaline pumping and everything else.
Yeah, I think the playlist is up to, like, you know, 24, 25 songs. Yeah, so definitely a good mix for your holiday parties if you're tired of the usual Christmas fare.
Yeah, so, you know, keeping with the party tradition, I think a lot of you folks probably will know this next tune coming up. But you know what? We're going to put a little bit of twist on it. So we got the Key of Awesome number 52 with Santa and You Know It. I mean, I feel bells. Like we need some girls like working on the pool table or something as this is going on.
Yeah, but we do need to install a stripper pole down here.
We got a magazine to order that from, by the way.
Yeah, this is the Key of Awesome's parody of I'm Sexy and I Know It.
Key of Awesome number 52, damn it.
Key of Awesome does a bunch of hilarious videos. You should check them out.
Oh, after this, we most definitely will be.
So you fall down a deep hole and start looking at Key of Awesome.
Yeah, I mean, it's crazy how many of these bands, you know, came out here and, you know, have remixed a lot of this holiday stuff that I'm going back looking at non-holiday and I'm just laughing my ass off the entire time.
Yeah, when I was looking at playlist today, I just kept falling down YouTube holes. And, oh, yeah, I forgot I'm supposed to be looking for Christmas songs.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean, you know, definitely good time. So, you know, you can see, folks, we got a little something. If you want to shake your booty, if you want to rock out on some air guitar, the Cigar Nerds have you covered with your host. I'll be DJ Awesome B-Rad on the ones and twos.
DJ Flamer.
Fuck you, all right? And on that note, God, I'm just going to open it up to the man himself, you know. We're going to jump right into get ready to rock again, folks, because this is Alice Cooper. Santa Claus is coming to town. Oh, you better watch out.
That's one thing funny. Like, when I started looking for songs, I didn't realize how many, like, additional rock bands and Christmas albums.
Yeah, I don't know, man. I stumbled upon, you know, Korn doing Jingle Bells, where all the musicians, like, you know, basically took up different instruments and stuff, and it was just absolutely weird.
I saw some of the Korn. Twisted Sister did a full Christmas album I didn't know about.
We need to get that on LP now that we have an LP player.
Yeah. Speaking of rockers, I just found a picture of Slash wearing a Netherworld hoodie, so.
That's awesome.
Slash is down with some nerdness. To get him in the nerd cave.
I mean,
could Slash do our new intro music?
I think that might cost us.
Probably.
Can that be one of those tax write-offs we discussed, you know? I mean, for podcast expense?
Hey, we have a Donate to the Cigar Fund link on our website now, so if anybody want to help us, like, acquire Slash, just go donate to the Cigar Fund.
Or if you want to help us acquire cigars, beer.
Yeah.
Or any other nerdiness.
If you want to get a gift for us, just go donate on the website.
Yeah, absolutely.
What's next there, Brad?
Well, next on the list here, this is going to be just off the wall. Some folks may recognize this band for their song Fuck Me in the Ass because I love Jesus.
Yeah, I wouldn't even have gone there, dude. I'd have let them found that one on their own.
I mean, I just had to throw it out there. Yeah, I mean, Jesus, the Christmas spirit. I mean,
damn it. definitely earning the explicit tag this week.
So here we go with some Garfunkel and Oates, Scary Fucked Up Christmas.
Yeah, definitely check out Garfunkel and Oates. They have a bunch of hilarious songs on up on YouTube and stuff. You can make a snowman in the snow for show, but if you can't handle family shit, get your wrong and take a hit. Their song, The Party Took a Turn to the Douche, is one, also one of my favorites.
I'm just going to leave that one alone. I'm not going to touch it.
The video is hilarious, man. It's all Ed Hardy shirts and gold rims.
You know, we saw some Ed Hardy shirts when we went to the flea market last weekend to score our sweet Nintendo 64.
Yeah, we don't go to the flea market to get gold chains. We go to get old school Nintendo. We need to make a gold chain necklace out of, like, some old Nintendo cartridges, like an old, like, original Zelda.
I think MC Lars beat us to that.
Yeah. I do have a necklace that's a Nintendo controller I got from
awesome.
Reggie Branson. Oh, this song is just so weird.
Yeah, definitely. And I'm going to end it right there, folks, because that's what I do here. So, we're the only Christmas episode where the ending is going to be
don't smoke the
balls.
Mistletoe.
Didn't we try that one year?
I don't know.
So, the next station coming up, these guys have put out so much awesomeness over the, golly, I don't even know how long they've been putting out, you know, information. But as soon as you hear the intro, you're going to be like, oh my God, I probably watched every one of their videos 17 times at least. So I'm going to open it
up
to, we're going to take it back, get a little bit of gangster rap feel going on with, Moses vs. Santa Claus and see who gets got first. Dude, these guys just go so hard on their mixes too. Like.
For a, you know, nerd rappers, I mean, they hit it hard. That's the thing is we've got more into the nerdcore hip hop. I like these guys take it like they go like full on with it.
Yeah,
and if you can't tell, Moses in this song is Snoop D-O-double-G.
Snoop Doggy Dogg. I mean, I don't even want to interrupt the rhyme.
No. You got a strict religion, no bacon. Poor little Jen and Bruce for this one. I'm a jolly bowl of jelly, giving holiday presents. But all the chosen people ever get for Christmas is jealous. When I was high upon the mountain, God revealed the truth of the earth.
Let's give it up to the man.
Take number to G-Thang, baby. You took the price out of Christmas and just added more mass. You need to stop breaking the houses and creeping them, peeping on 90 kids. Why they sleeping? You're going to start writing some rhymes, dude. We're going to have to do the Cigar Nerds rap disc.
Absolutely. Yeah, we're going to have to get away from karaoke and just go straight into gangster rap.
Yeah, we're going to start writing some songs, though. Maybe get Lars to help us mix something together.
Yeah, definitely. Maybe we can actually get him to sit down on a segment once his album gets closer to releasing or something, and you know, take it from there. All right, so since I'm on the ones and twos, I'm going to spin this in a completely different direction. Some of you folks, I remember this show from my childhood, and I can remember always staying up till 11 o'clock at night until, you know, freaking Tales from the Crypt aired. So
oh, shit.
We're going to turn it over to the Crypt Master himself.
Do we got to do a whole Tales from the Crypt pod? Maybe our next year's Christmas, our Halloween episode. Yeah. Tales from the Crypt did a whole Christmas album. I mean, I actually had this on CD when it came out. I don't know where it's at now. I've long since lost it, but yeah.
I'm sure we'll stumble across it, though, digging through some of the...
I bought this out. And they have the full album up on YouTube, so you can hear all it in its entirety. But it was messed up.
I wouldn't say messed up. I mean...
The thing about the show is, like, there's so many, like, guest stars, man. If you were a big actor, you were on Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, definitely. Yeah. I mean, I can still remember, you know, some of the wood chipper scenes and stuff. I wonder how many horror movies based their kills and stuff off of some of the stuff we saw from Tales from the Crypt.
Yeah, we've definitely got to do a Tales from the Crypt episode.
Always a good excuse. What are we going to find? Can we find that on Blu-ray and DVD these days?
Probably, somewhere.
Yeah, these people probably—they don't even understand what Tales from the Crypt are. They're like, "What? What are you guys talking about?"
They probably got a bunch of episodes on YouTube or something. I don't know. We'll find it somehow.
All right. So, all things considered, Joe, this next one—you know—for the Spike commercial, I don't even want to tell folks what this is.
Is this our final?
This is going to be our final closer here, folks. And you know, everybody in the nerd scene. You can appreciate this unless you're a Star Trek fan, and then, well, fuck you, because we're doing this anyway. No interruptions.
You better watch out.
You better not cry.
You better not call on your Jedi.
The Empire is coming to town.
We have a Death Star.
We've tested it twice.
Tracking down rebels and ending their lives.
The Empire is coming to town.
I have a very bad feeling about this.
This is reminding me of that horrible Star Wars Christmas special.
I don't know that I ever got around to watching it.
They've got the full version up on YouTube, and I've tried watching it. It is so bad. The only good thing to come out of that is the first appearance of Boba Fett. There's an animated Boba Fett cartoon in the Christmas special. But other than that, it is just unwatchable. This is like, I've seen everything Star Wars at least 100 million times. But yeah, the Star Wars Christmas special is a good way to torture yourself over the holidays. So what's some songs that didn't necessarily make our the list that we've showed them so far?
Well, I mean, you got Jack Black doing the Christmas song. You've got we already touched on
We already played in the earlier segments Corey Taylor's Xmas song, and of course Run DMC's Christmas in Hollis.
You know, one I stumbled upon was Foster Brooks and the Drunken 12 Days of Christmas. And it starts out so traditional. And then his drunk impression and everything else, I mean, I would expect that on some Zane Lamprey shit or something, yeah. You know?
I mean, Lars has a Christmas song, too, with Gary the Green-Nosed Reindeer. I think there's a couple MC Chris Christmas songs that I don't think I've added to the list
yet. Yeah, I mean, we got Cheech and Chong, The Kinks, let's see here, The Ramones.
Yeah, just go on YouTube and look for weird Christmas stuff.
You know what? Folks, all you got to do is go on to YouTube, subscribe to the Cigar Nerds channel. We've got the playlist up for you, so you can hear all the songs that we played, plus any more that we happen to stumble upon between now and the holiday.
Oh, yeah, because I definitely need to add some more songs to it. Yeah, like I said, we haven't done a whole lot with the YouTube channel yet, but we're planning on doing some more YouTube stuff in the future. But, yeah, to start off with, we've got our Christmas playlist. So we have the full versions of all these songs we've played, plus some more that we've just not had time to play. And that'll be definitely up on our Facebook page. And like I said, you can go to our Cigar Nerds podcast YouTube page and subscribe and check out any of the crazy stuff we do in the future. Hopefully somebody will give us a camera for Christmas so we can start doing more YouTubery.
Yeah. Come on, Santa. I'm making a list. You've already checked it twice.
But I think we're on the naughty list, dude.
right. Well, I'll just settle for a lump of coal. At least I can cook us some food with it.
I'll tell you what, we'll just leave him one of these Sweetwater festive ales with his cookies, and you know, I think we'll be back in the good. Maybe drop him a Rabid Reindeer cigar to go with the cookies.
Santa would appreciate that.
I think that'll about wrap us up, folks. So any final thoughts on our un-Christmas special here?
Final closing thoughts.
Ho, ho, ho. I have a machine gun.
I mean, dude, you're just saying ho, ho, ho. I mean, there's so many different parodies I could probably conjure up in my head about.
Snoop Dogg, ho, ho, ho's. Yeah. Well, I said this is probably going to be our Christmas episode, but this is also going to be the last show before the new year.
What? We're going to go a whole year without recording? Blasphemy.
That's only like a couple weeks. So what's a highlight from 2014 for you?
Highlight of 2014.
I mean, it doesn't even have to be like podcast related. It's something from the year that as we look back on what we've accomplished or failed to accomplish this year.
Well, you know what? And sticking with the podcast, I'm going to say I'm glad to see it actually come to fruition. You and I, you know, we hang out a lot throughout the week. On the weekends, we spend a lot of, you know, quality time together and stuff like that. And we toss around what a lot of people would be crazy off-the-wall ideas. And it's nice to see, you know, some of these ideas starting to stick and something happen of them. You know, I think that's one thing. I'm really grateful for it. It's brought our friendship closer and everything. So, yeah, I want to leave it on a positive note, man.
To not sound cheesy myself, yeah, but like I said, for my pilot of the year is probably starting this podcast because, you know, it literally saved my sanity because, like I said, the rest of the time, I mean, I'm super stressed out. The real world sucks, but I know twice a month at least I'm going to sit down with my friends, have a cigar, and talk nerd shit and not worry about, you know, any of the other half a million things I need to get done.
Plus,
and, you know,
we're going to rock out some Nintendo 64.
And like I said, I've met the ESO guys and all those guys and hanging out with Q and John. And you know, we've met a lot of cool people, you know, since we've started this podcast, and it's definitely made me a more social person. So going into the new year, anything for 2015 you're looking forward to or want to see happen in the new year?
Yeah, I want to see Star Wars. I want to see our podcast, you know, take off and, you know, establish some, you know, specifics and figure out a true direction on how far we want to take things. And, you know, overall, a new year, hell, I want to see our friendship, you know, continue to blossom and grow and, you know, invite, you know, I mean, just see more and more of our con buddies and everybody else come together and, you know, be able to escape some of the bullshit of reality and have a good time and, you know, and increase our quality of life and enjoyment.
I definitely want to, you know, keep improving on the podcast to see Avengers Age of Ultron when it comes out. That's from my early plans for 2015. And also, folks, like I said, with it being the holidays, you know, we put this out every 2 weeks. There might be an extra week because, like I said, it's the holidays. We get busy like everybody else. So, but we will be back. And
what he's saying there is we're going to have to recover from New Year's.
Yeah. So we may not be on our regular 2 week schedule, but we will be back in early 2015 in January with some brand new Cigar Nerd shows. And with that, follow us on Facebook, Twitter, and you know, Facebook and Twitter @ Cigar Nerd Pod. You know, check our website, cigarnerdpodcast.com. Be sure to download us, like us on the iTunes, Stitcher, and we're kind of working on trying to put together some YouTube stuff. We already put up our Christmas playlist on there, but we're going to try to start doing some video segments in the new year. And with that, happy holidays and yippee-ki-yay, Merry Christmas.
Happy holidays, folks.
And this has been a recording of the Cigar Nerd Podcast. We are your hosts, Smokin' Joe and Brad Jackson. Join us next time for more adventures in nerddom.
This has been a broadcast of the ESO Network, your station for all things geek, classic, current, and beyond. Be part of the crew at ESONetwork.com.